Welcome to the Lock on Everything with your host, Brian Locklear. Although I typically do an episode only once a week, I reached out to Dr. Tony here to get some information about the coronavirus to try to settle some people's nerves. Dr. Tony, before I get into putting you in the hot seat, if you want to talk about yourself, where you're from, your medical experience, and things like that.
Sure. Well, thank you, Brian, for having me on and informational for people. My name is Dr. Tony Maglione. I am from New York originally. My family is from Italy. I ended up studying medicine in Italy in the 70s and became a doctor and started working in residency in the 1980s. Early on, I dealt with very first year. We dealt with discovering AIDS where I worked in New York, and basically became a cardiologist, went to the Cleveland Clinic, and I ended up single parenting for a while. And when my last kid went to Chapel Hill, I moved to Wilmington and basically got remarried. I got a great wife, Mindy, and got interested in political science and really did that with podcast and radio and some TV appearances, and have written now 3 books. My last book is in print and will be out on Amazon sometime in April. It could be backed up because of the coronavirus issue. And the name of the book is Rules for Conservative Patriots. But I've got some expertise on public health issues because I also wrote a book and am the first doctor to write a book that's actually named Obamacare back in 2010 when Obamacare got written into law and we had to deal with its consequences. So that's a brief summary and we can go from there, Brian.
Yeah, sir. Well, I appreciate it, Dr. Tony. So one of the reasons, like I said, I wanted to ask you on here is to talk to you about the coronavirus. And I do want to get into your books, all 3 of them, if you don't mind. But the most pressing issue, of course, is the coronavirus, and there's so much information going on. And if you look at it, in December, we know that Congress knew that there was something going on in China, and they didn't act on it, of course, because the impeachment trials were going on. And until the impeachment trial failed and the president wasn't removed, nobody is worried about this virus, even though before it ended, the president said, hey, we need to stop travelers coming from China. We need to go ahead and do it. And then everybody said, well, that is racist. So then when the president's held his meetings the last 2 weeks or the last 2 nights with Department of Health Services, they said that what the president actually done actually kept us from being like Italy is right now, to where, although we know they have a form of socialized medicine where they're actually not being able to treat their older patients, or they have decided not to treat their older patients. Is that something that you would agree with as far as putting the travel ban on?
Yeah, there's a lot of things I can get into on based on what you just said. But just to give a little short synopsis of that, we know from before that outbreaks occur. It's part of just the way things are with human nature and viruses and bacteria. And it ends up, certain viruses end up becoming endemic. And if they spread to enough countries, a pandemic. We've got experience that goes back over 100 years, down to 1918 with the Spanish flu. And so we know a lot about it. And so the fact that one comes isn't a surprise. The issue is then, what does one do about it? And there's no question. There's a lot of issues here about how China initially handled it, how then it was handled in our own country, how it was handled in other countries, and where we are today. So a lot can be said about it. But for the things that you said, Italy, just to make a point that I think you're trying to infer to, Italy is a socialized system. I knew in the late 70s when I was a medical student there that government medicine was terrible. When government is control of medicine, even though people have care, they end up having long lines of care, and there's a natural rationing that occurs because of cost and because the attitude of people who serve in healthcare, the providers and the people who assist them, just don't work as hard. There isn't an incentive. There isn't a free market incentive to do more. And so they don't innovate. In fact, all the advances in all of these types of countries in Europe that practice socialized medicine, they depended on the United States basically for about 80% of their medical advances and technology. And so our progress ended up helping them. So it's no surprise that in Italy, that their system, as soon as there was a problem, they did all the wrong things, mainly because they have a deep, deep state bureaucracy that's not only laden with people that don't know what they're doing, but with laden with people that react too late. They don't foresee things. They don't make decisive decisions, and there is no leadership. And that's part of the problem that's occurred in Italy. And I can go into much more detail about its problems. But there are some other issues that happen here in the United States that I'm sure you're going to allude to. And I'm just started with one little thing just to tease everybody. The virus is not the problem. The problem is the reaction. And that means the press, what they've done, and many other political leaders. And they've sucked in today, I saw even President Trump, into doing something that I think he shouldn't have done. But we can get into that a little bit later. So I just wanted to get that ball rolling a little bit and get that started.
Oh, yes, sir. So before we move on, I did want to ask you, since you mentioned the socialized medicine and basically universal healthcare, that is one of the things, Doc, that I try to tell people. One, I try to tell them, especially veterans that have this idea that universal healthcare is like the greatest thing ever. And I try to tell them, like, you know, look at the VA system before the president fired 3,000 and some people. That was in the VA. There was no incentive to work. There was no incentive to take care of them. You couldn't fire them. I mean, there was no proof of anything. And then veterans were dying left and right, and they were hiding it all because the VA is actually socialized medicine. And if the country can't take care of 1% of our population, then how in the world do we think we're going to allow the country to take care of 99% of the other 99% of the population?
Right. And I wrote about that in Obamacare, and I actually wrote about that in my latest book when I talk about solutions. There actually is one situation where we should have Medicare for all. We actually should have Medicare for all veterans because of what they've done. And that can be worked out very easily if we got rid of the actual VA system and made it so that they can get actually the right type of care. The type of money we spend on a person for VA care, if we got rid of the whole bureaucracy that is laden with, as you were implying, fraud and corruption, and where people are delayed. And I can tell you honestly, even though it actually literally in practicality covers about 10 million people, veterans, if you were to make that 330 some odd million people, the amount of terrible medicine that will be practiced, like what Bernie wants and Elizabeth Warren, would end up hurting people. If you actually love people and care about them, you would never want the government to be control of healthcare. They are the most inefficient, and they're set up in such a way that there is no incentive for any innovation or discovery. The only reason we're able to fight this virus, and eventually we'll take care of this coronavirus, and I'll give you reasons for that a little bit later, but the only reason we can is because we have a free market system in the world, and there are people trying to find the right cure and vaccination so that we can combat this as quickly as possible in order to minimize the damage. So, as you say, there should never be socialized care in this country. It should never happen. Government always needs to be as small as possible. And when government gets bigger, your health is involved in getting worse. Your liberties and your freedoms are involved. And that's just not an opinion. That's a statement of fact. And we can go into many examples as to how the government is terrible with the post office, the motor vehicle bureau, and just about everything they do, including the way they run our government. So your point is very well taken on that.
Yes, sir. So let's get on what you was talking about with the coronavirus. Now, I've heard multiple things, and I don't know if you've heard something differently, but I've heard everything from it started from eating random bats to it was created here in America, and it was taken over by a Chinese doctor and released out into the Wu-Tang community, or somehow it got out. Have you heard anything of what would actually be more factual of what happened?
Well, I can't tell you what is proposed out there. I can tell you what we know. We know that coronavirus existed almost 20 years ago. This is the third outbreak of coronavirus. So the idea that this is completely new is another fictitious thing that is out there in the press. We actually have an article from people who are doctors and scientists in Wuhan, where it originated in China, that came out in January of 2019, where they actually state that with the two previous outbreaks, not much was done to rectify the situation in case another outbreak occurred. And they were predicting one. They didn't know it was going to come right from their own area and their own province, but it did. And so these scientists actually signaled a study and to show how bad it was, that it will definitely was going to come and was going to come within a matter of years. And they were right on the money on that. And as far as what you were saying, there is a bat source. And one of the problems with bats being a source, because bats a mammal, it can actually carry the virus. Bats can go longer distances than other mammals because they can fly. And so it ends up putting in danger more than just the local region that you can quarantine and stop the spread of something. It ends up being in different locations at the same time or in a very short period of time. So there are other issues there from a healthcare standpoint. So I wouldn't go as to that somebody did it on purpose. I think the Chinese may use it as an opportunity when it started to spread to keep it quiet because they didn't want the embarrassment of it. And once they realized it was out, they did their own quarantine and they didn't care how much damage it would do to the rest of the world. They thought it might end up helping them since, you know, they're not exactly good people, the communist leaders.
Yes, sir.
That's how it started. So we've got it. The question is, it doesn't matter as much. It's what we're going to do about it with what we know now that is much more important.
Now, with the going on your political science side, because I posted something the other day, and I try not to be a conspiracy theorist, but there's a lot of things surrounding our president that really has my mind just blown. And maybe it was just good timing. But I was looking at the Chinese trade deal. And on the Chinese trade deal, it's about a $20 billion trade deal from previous years. And the president said that China wasn't very happy about it. And now we have the coronavirus out, and China is saying that they're not willing to release medicine to the United States. Do you think the two of those have anything to do with each other?
No, I doubt that that's coming from the main government, the central government in China. I think those are just some people who are politically in certain areas that are speaking up and making idle threats. That actually will not happen. But it does teach us one thing, just like in a stock market or your portfolio, you should never have anything all in one area. And we should not have all our parts of all our medical supplies and medicines coming from China. We have to make sure that we do enough on our own so that we become independent, just like we should have done in the past and did with Trump on energy, where it became energy independent. We need to do that in terms of supplies. So the trade deal is definitely a good thing, and to hold them accountable. And plus, it's not $20 billion; we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. So it is the right thing. He has foreseen what needed to be done. Unfortunately, you know, a virus is an act from God, just like a tornado or a hurricane, and it can wipe people. The one good thing about this virus, it's not as bad as they're telling you it is, because this thing really hurts the people who are sickest. It doesn't hurt the young. It doesn't hurt babies. It doesn't kill babies. It doesn't kill the young. And so it doesn't kill the healthy. So it actually is something that is, if you're going to have a virus that spreads, this is a better virus than the ones we've had in the last, you know, 40, 50 years since HIV.
Yes, sir. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one of the big topics. So there's a lot of rumors going around about what the coronavirus actually does to your body. And like you said, you know, about watching on the media and stuff, and what they say is the media keeps talking about how many people are getting affected or infected, but they're not talking about how many people have recovered from it. And I was reading some information, and I'm not an MD, so I'm going to ask you this. But it was saying that the people that recover from it are losing large percentages of functionality from their lungs. Is that just their lungs are basically just tired and beat up from being sick and just need to get a chance to heal, or is there something more to it?
Well, actually that is not something that's not known. The what we do know, and this is what we know, and even from previous outbreaks of this exact same virus, this is mainly a respiratory virus. And in fact, it goes into your respiratory tree, and it will cause more problems in people who are smokers, who have respiratory pulmonary problems or cardiopulmonary problems, or have a low immune system. And so they're the ones that get affected by this. So when people say things about on the press that make people worry, the problem that this has created is the panic and the fear of something unknown. It actually is known. I'm tired of these people who are bureaucrats, and some of them that are on TV who just like to hear themselves on all the time, who are not calling for calm. Dr. Drew Pinsky has called for calm. Dr. Oz and a couple other people, like one of the doctors on Fox. But the rest have actually perpetuated the panic by trying to make it like giving the worst case scenario. And there is no worst case scenario. It's something we've never seen before. And like I said, this is not an unknown virus, and we've seen it before. This is actually a fairly benign virus in that it actually affects the sick. And the reason that something should have been done about it before by the Chinese, they could have acted before, because they had two of that same coronavirus in the last 20 years within China that they did not act on. If they had told the world about it and given samples of people who recovered, we could have had a vaccine for this already. So that's number one. Number two, the reason I'm saying it's not so bad is a lot of the people who are dying are people who are in their 80s. The average age is 80 years old. And I don't know if you know this, Brian, but the average age of dying in this country is 79 years and about 8 to 9 months. So you're getting the people who are already over the average age of life in this country. So they are the most susceptible, because they are the closest people to dying in the first place. And if they have a couple other medical conditions, this is a setup with a low immune system to create pneumonia, which is the main cause for them to decompensate. So the people who ever get pneumonia, initially their lung capacity and their other pulmonary measures that you can do is going to be diminished, is going to be damaged. And most of these people already have damaged lungs. So it's not surprising that somebody might say that. But healthy people are going to recover completely. Just like a healthy person who gets a walking pneumonia, they recover completely. And the majority of them, if they don't have other problems, have 100% recovery. And it's not a big deal. You're just sick for a few weeks, just like people are with the regular flu. They're sick for a few weeks. The majority of people recover. Over 99% of people recover completely. The same thing is with this. That's why this is not a terrible virus. For the people that get it, of course, but it's only affecting about 10 to 15% of our population. Other people will get the virus, and it's not going to cause anything other than a few symptoms that make it uncomfortable, but not dangerous at all. And so we've got a problem that is being made worse because there's much more fear-mongering going on. Some of that is political. Some of it is because people are weak. Some of it is self-serving because the press wants to promote itself and make themselves the story. Also, politicians are doing the same on both sides. I've seen Republicans try to make themselves real important too on this.
Yes, sir.
So this is a problem of human nature. Unfortunately, in a few minutes, when you have to ask another question, I'll give you some actual real statistics that people may not want to hear, but they've been known for decades, and it would make things, it put things in proper perspective, because one of the biggest problems, Brian, is people are not looking at this virus and putting it in its proper context and proper perspective. And if you do, we wouldn't have this type of crash in the market. We would have the usual 5 or 10% correction because businesses will be slow for a time period.
Yes, sir. So if I understand what you're saying, those that basically have IgG deficiencies are prone to getting pneumonia every year, every other year. People that have just basically weakened immune systems or weak lungs already are pretty much the ones that we just gonna have to pay a little bit more attention to.
Especially. Look, it's not really affecting anybody under 50, except in situations where they messed it up, like in Italy, where they quarantine provinces. There were three major provinces that got exposure, and they quarantined these people into that province. So what happened is you had all these cases being taken care of by a few healthcare workers, and these healthy healthcare workers got overwhelmed with the exposure, and some of them have actually gotten really sick, and a couple of them have actually died. So those are the only things of healthy people where we've actually had bad outcomes. The rest of the world, anybody under 50 who doesn't have two or three medical issues, of which one of them usually is either in a low immune system because they're recovering from cancer or some other autoimmune problem, or if they actually have a bad, you know, respiratory problem, COPD, emphysema, or a cardiopulmonary problem like heart failure, they've got very little to worry about. The flu, just to give you an example, Brian, to put it in perspective and context, the flu over the last 10 to 15 years kills between 100 and 150 people a day. The flu. Now we have people, older people are vaccinated. Even younger people are vaccinated. That's with the vaccine. We're getting 100 to 150 people dying a day. So this has only caused about one death a day so far. Eventually, it'll be causing 3, 4, 5 deaths. But it'll never be as bad. It'll still be one-tenth as bad as the flu. And we don't uproot our whole lives where we don't go to restaurants or don't go anywhere for all, you know, and kill the stock market. So there is some other angle going on here, which I suspect is political. But look, some of the advice they give is okay, just so you know. There's the reason we don't want as many people infected is we don't want that exposure to the people that are vulnerable. And in my line of business, people are either low risk, like the healthy people under 50, and people even older 50 who don't have other medical problems. People are in the intermediate risk are people who have some problems, and their age might be a little younger, or they're just old and don't have any problems. They might be in an intermediate risk. And then there are those that have a high risk, people who are already past the age of 75 and have a couple of medical issues. Now, who are the people, Brian, that have the most medical issues that are old? They're the ones in the nursing homes. They're the ones that the majority of people have died in the United States. And we're talking about skilled nursing homes. There are 1.4 million people in nursing homes in this country. There are about 15,000 nursing homes. And those 1.4 million are the ones that are at highest risk. And, you know, I don't sound to be cold, but the one of the actual facts is people, once you get put in a nursing home, the average lifespan is under 14 months.
Right.
So it doesn't surprise anybody that knows numbers and perspective and context that if they get people who only have less than 14 months to live, the majority of people, that it'll take just one illness that causes a pneumonia to kill them, because that's what happens every day. And like I said, pneumonia and influenza, usually caused by influenza, actually is like the sixth biggest killer in the United States. And we get, you know, like I said, 150 or so a day in, that do that. By the way, do you know how many people die in the United States every day?
How many? No.
Over 7,000. 7,000 people. Guess how many people die every day from car accidents? Over 100. Now, should we all stop driving cars? Because now we got 100 people dying a day where this virus is only killing one. And see, my issue, and this is the problem, and Trump didn't get good advisors. The real issue with this is not issue how many people get the virus, because 85% of people would get it. They wouldn't even have any major symptoms in this country, and they'd be immune to it because they were exposed to it.
Right.
The issue is not that issue. Trump should have been told that the most important thing to know is how many people need to be hospitalized, not how many people die, because old people will die. How many people need to be hospitalized? And that is not so far a very high number. So far, the people needing to be hospitalized is in the hundreds, which is nothing. We have over, I think it's 15,000 hospitals, and we have a certain number of, you know, beds that I don't know the exact number of, but the bottom line is we have plenty of room for these patients. The idea that we're going to run out of supplies will only happen if it happens in a concentrated area and we don't allow patients to be moved and doctors to be moved, which we aren't going to be as, hopefully, as rigid as the Italians were and make it so that people don't make wise decisions. One more thing. You may not be familiar with this, Brian, but the majority of people in skilled nursing homes have something called the DNR order. That means do not resuscitate. That means they're not going to be hospitalized and put on respirators anyway. That's their own wish. So there's a lot of worry about things they're supposing can be the worst case scenario, but they haven't looked at all the facts, all the parameters. So I think Trump had bad advice, because when today he started saying you could only have crowds of 10, et cetera. Look, like I said, 85% of the people could congregate, could have this virus, and nothing happened. We should only be doing something to avoid spreading it to the most vulnerable of us in this country. And like I said, six out of seven or seven out of eight people, this is a nothing burger. And we shouldn't be changing everything, because we don't stop driving when 100 people die a day from driving. We don't stop doing the things when 150 people die a day from the flu. We're altering all this lifestyle out of a fear that hasn't been realized and has never occurred in the last 100 years of the flu. That's what's dangerous about it. This is not the Black Plague. This is not untreatable diseases that people had in the Middle Ages or in the 16, 1700s, like tuberculosis and typhoid. This is something we can deal with and take care of. It's a temporary problem, and it's not as big a problem as the press is making out to be. So I hope those are the major salient points. So I hope I made that clear.
Oh, yes, sir. And you brought up a point that I was going to ask you about, too. So last night when the president held the briefing, and today, last night, Mike Pence was asked about the amount of respirators and supplies and stuff like that. And then today, the president was asked, and I'm not a medical doctor, but I have a little bit of common sense. And I was thinking along the lines of what you were saying as far as how many people would actually be hospitalized for it. But the way the reporters asked a question It was as if we were needing millions of respirators and ventilators and like all these other things to go out across the entire country, as if this is, you know, The Walking Dead or you know, a television show that's about the apocalypse or the end of the world.
Right. And you know, this is for somebody as a cardiologist in the past, we used to be the intensivists. We used to be the critical care doctors and be there at night taking care of people who are on respirators. And I'm going to just tell you, this is absurd. This is just so absurd. Obviously, nobody, not even I, looking at the past, can say, even though it's never happened before, that something bad can't happen that's different than anything else before. But we have enough data with two previous outbreaks of this virus, of coronavirus, and we have already knowledge for 100 years of dealing with viral epidemics and pandemics. And we also have something called technology now. We actually are able, where before, when we had AIDS, we didn't have the capabilities, you know, back in the early 80s. And it took about 10 years to develop good medical therapy for it. You know, but AIDS was a serious disease, has killed over 30 million people. This is not going to be killing over 30 million. This is going to kill over a few hundred thousand, and we will have a treatment for it. So relative to our history, it's going to be a very minor problem and a minor blip in the field of healthcare epidemics. And that's a reality. It's being made bigger than it actually is.
At Ruck Up Podcast, we take a little bit of a different approach. We take industry professionals from law enforcement, military, security, and outdoors enthusiasts all around the world, and we hear their story. So let's hear it.
Attack or infiltration or suspected infiltration, and we have to be ready to
allegedly massacred by the Crown Prince, and I was there not to do with that. I arrived the day after.
Check us out at our website at ruckupmedia.com.
Let me just give you something that maybe you already know this and have looked this up. But under Obama in 2010, because you were talking about the impeachment and the timing and ignoring the problem. Well, in 2010, the swine flu hit right at the crucial time Obamacare was passing, you know, in March of 2010. Nothing was done by the Obama administration until October. At that time, there were, they say on the news, 1,000 deaths, but actually there were closer to 4,000 deaths in the United States. And between the 1 year from when it started in March to the following March, there were over 12,000 deaths. The stock market had 0% change. There was no panic or fear. The press totally ignored it. The amount of people who got the swine flu was over 50 and some say 60 million, depending on which medical thing you look at. In the United States, 60 million. Right now we've got, what, 2,000 in the United States? I don't even know. 6,000? The bottom line is we're not even going to get a million if we get that many. This is why this is so political and so done incorrectly in informing the public. I mean, there's a big thing. And by the way, in the world, there were over 500 million people who got the swine flu. Right now in the world, what is it? 200,000 people so far in the world. It's incredible. Compared to the swine flu, this is very, very, very little in terms of actual virulence and mortality and morbidity. But, and nothing happened to the market, nothing. So I just to put things in context and perspective, I think it's important for Americans to know. It doesn't mean, and if you want me to, I'll go over the things that people need to do to be safer and what common sense things to do. But it doesn't mean we don't treat it seriously like we treat any illness or disease and medicine. But you have to put it in proper context. The heart attack is more serious than somebody who has a virus because of the mortality and the morbidity. And so there are certain contents we do, and you can actually do it within different types of viral illnesses. and we're not doing it here for reasons that escape me. I think, and I just wish they had better messaging by the medical people on the Trump team, because I think he wouldn't get beaten up as much. And I wish he got better advice, because I think they've convinced him to overreact on this.
I think a lot of it is just the constant drama, the constant media push, the constant coverage. You know, there's no coverage on people in Hollywood now that adult actors that were child actors saying they were, you know, being molested or raped by Hollywood. And the media is not saying anything about that going on right now. They're not saying anything about the 200 and some CEOs that dropped out or moved out of their position since the beginning of this year. They're not talking about any of those things that would actually affect the stock market. You know, everybody leaving and all these companies don't have a CEO and they don't know what they're turning. But instead of actually something that, you know, is actually we should look into, it's more of promoting this scare. And I know a lot of people find it funny, because I do too, but it's really sad the amount of people that have went to the store and bought toilet paper.
Right. That's because fear is a very powerful perception. If you're, and people should not fear when there is nothing to really fear about. In perspective, do people fear? Look, what happens every day? You're a veteran. 20 veterans every day commit suicide. Where's the outrage on that when we're having only about one person dying from this flu, who are actually people who are the sickest 5 to 10% of our population? This is what it's just amazing to me. We have all these deaths from drunk driving, and a lot more than this flu causes, and nobody's saying anything. Nobody's doing anything about it. How about the opioid crisis? We have over 100 people every day dying still of the opioid crisis and fentanyl. Are we outraged about that? Is the market gone down? Of course not. That's why I know there's a virus, something we got to deal with. My advice to people, just to let you know very simply, my advice to people, if you have somebody who has a higher risk of a medical problem, they've got two or three things wrong, one of which is a serious lung problem, you got to try to stay away from them for these next anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks till the curve comes down. And you got to try to have as minimal contact as possible. And if you are in contact with that person, you have to try to do the things that are smart. The other person who's susceptible, they've got it. Besides, you've heard this about washing their hands. One thing they don't tell you, and as a heart doctor, fluid intake is important. If you don't have a reason to restrict fluids, if you're out in public and come home, you need to be drinking a lot of fluid to wash down whatever you can wash down. Not that it goes down, you know, in from your throat down, but it actually clears your system and you end up, you know, excreting right more. So you should double or triple your fluid intake. You should change your clothes, because the stuff can stay on you when you get home from being outside with the crowd. Very simple stuff. You should avoid seeing people who are vulnerable, the most vulnerable, like nursing homes, or people who have just recently undergone cancer therapy, or that have certain autoimmune illnesses. And, you know, people know who they are. They're going to should be checking with their doctor to see what group they're in. But some of the doctors won't give them, don't even know what to tell them. That's part of the problem, too, because there's misinformation coming from the government. The government and the doctor governments are like the VA. They're not the best of the best. It's the private sector that is. And unfortunately, because of TV and perception, it doesn't look that way, you know, and that's part of the issues that really.
Yeah, because
but if you got any more questions about that, I'll be happy to answer before we finish.
Well, you know, that was one of the things, Doc, because I was looking at another news source. I don't remember which one it was, but it was a local news or where it was at in America. And it was saying that the doctor's offices and the hospitals and stuff were checking people's temperatures. And if they had a temperature, they were turning them away so they don't go to the hospital, because people are, you know, flooding hospitals and places that are designed to to be used for emergency purposes instead of going to a primary care doctor and urgent care or something like that. They're flooding the hospitals, and either they're going to give something to someone else in the hospital, or they're going to catch something a whole lot worse than the symptoms that, you know, they went on WebMD and WebMD told them they had the coronavirus, or Google told them they had a coronavirus.
Right. And look, the government and the recommendations from the CDC, no, they are valid in the sense that only people who are suspected should get the test. And only people who, if you have symptoms of the, what people normally would ascribe to as the flu, and generally this is, the flu causes more aches and pains in your body than this does. Also, this is a drier cough. Most people with the flu, it's a little bit more in your nasal system, and it, you kind of think you have sinus or allergies, and you also got fever, and you also got a cough and a sore throat. But this one tends to be more of a sore throat and a dry cough that eventually gets in, many of them that are susceptible, gets into their lungs and causes pneumonia. So if you have those type of symptoms, you need to call your doctor, because right now, I can tell you, I just practicing today, I work in a clinic that actually has internal medicine, and here in Wilmington. And the kits are not available. Only the health department have the kits. Right now, there are labs that are set up and are just beginning. Quest and LabCorp are just beginning to have it set up. They're just getting it on in service. So it'll be here this week, and the doctors can either send you to the health clinic or to the labs and to get it done later this week. Part of the problem, they're not coming and we're done. North Carolina, Virginia, all these other states only have 30 or 40 cases. They're, and most of them, you know, about 80% of them are really are going to get better without ever getting diagnosed or treated. So we're talking about four or five cases. So there hasn't been as much of a need to get hundreds of thousands of kits here. But now they've revved it up. They're all going to be here. And so you've got to go through your doctor. And the best way, the telemedicine thing is not feasible. Most doctors do not have that. The idea that you, the best thing to do is to call and find out, have your doctor call you back. He'll talk to you on the phone and tell you what to do. That's probably the best idea to do. And the other thing, when they say everything is free, by the way, it's going to cost most people $100 out of pocket. And the question is, will they get reimbursed by the government? It's not completely free. So that is also not completely true. It's free for Medicare, Medicaid in that situation, or the VA, but it's not free for all these other insurances and the lab, because you also have to get tested for regular influenza. They're not going to even do the other test if you're positive for regular influenza. So it's not just one test. You can't just go somewhere and get tested. You've got to get a prescription from your doctor, or electronically or in hand. And the way of doing it, like you said, has to be done prudently. You just not go to the emergency room, not go to the hospital, not go to the clinic, and call first. And they can give you the best advice of what to do. And like I said, of the 50 some odd cases here, 40 of them are staying home. I actually have a relative through my wife that actually is being tested for it, because he's got similar symptoms and he actually has pneumonia, and he's in that one of those intermediate risk groups. And the person's home was treated by medical people for a few hours and went home and is now on quarantine until the results come back, because his influenza was normal and he may have coronavirus, but he's going to be fine because he's not at the high risk group. So people should not be flooding the hospitals. They should not be buying toilet paper, food in excess. They shouldn't be hoarding. We need to do our, like you have done, Brian, we need to do our service for this country. And our service is to not overreact, not panic, to buy things that you need for the next week or two, but not be hoarding stuff and then hurting other people, hurting your fellow citizens. That's not the way we Americans should be doing things. So,
yes, sir. So, I got I got one more thing that I wanted to ask you. It's not really a medical thing, but more of a common sense type thing. And then I want you to talk about your books right fast, if you don't mind, because I'm interested in those, actually, sure. Since you brought them up. So my last question for you, Doc, is there's a lot of when I was in the Army, we had sick leave, we had things like that, and I always build it up. And I always told everybody that I always kept 60 days of leave saved up in case something crazy happened. You know, in the military, you can't have more than 60 days now. But I always flirted with that threshold to make, you know, just as a safety net. So with that being said, with everybody talking about, you know, not being able to go to their job, you know, losing money, do you think that people will actually learn from this and be smarter with their money and smarter with their vacation days or sick days? Or do you think this is basically going to blow over and then everybody's just going to act like it never happened, like everything else in the world?
Well, I think it'll blow over, but it'll take a few years. You know, 9/11, most people don't remember it, you know, and I had, you know, my family was in New York, and we had people from our high school who were in the buildings. We know stuff and remember because we treasure our history. Most Americans do not. They don't even learn history. They don't put things in perspective. They don't have gratitude for the things that they do have and how great this country is. So I do think when this blows over, and then next year there's a vaccine and everything, I say within 2 years, this is not going to be even talked about at all. I don't think the way, and the press controls all of this. You know, we go away from God, we go away from what really is important in our lives, and everything is, you know, whatever the story is or the political ideology and agenda, that's what gets pushed through and talked about and emphasized. And sometimes it's lied about so much, people believe lies. And Brian, I suspect, you know, climate change, yes, sir, is a hoax. 100% hoax, all this, and there's so many hoaxes out there and that are presented. To me, one of the key things is the left do things and present things for reasons to only obtain power and control. And that's the biggest problem. And they'll lie and they'll be such hypocrites over things, but that's what they're there to do. And so human nature is not going to change, my friend. Unfortunately, I'm older than you. And even though people are born pure, unfortunately, it isn't just the person's fault. It's a societal thing. There's enough people who want to do harm to people. And right now, the left is doing us a lot of harm in every aspect, healthcare, morally, economically, and militarily, you know, because to have peace, the best thing you could do is have a strong military, because the best thing to cause peace is deterrence,
right,
and strength.
And see that, you know, you brought up morals, Doc, and that's one of the things I didn't get to ask you, but I'll just comment on before you talk about your book. And that's a fact of how aggressive the left was on the media about getting the coronavirus under control, getting money to it, doing all this other stuff. And then they set the bill in front of the GOP, and the GOP basically threw it in the trash. It was like, we're not funding Planned Parenthood. And if you're so worried about the coronavirus, why would you even try to put to fund Planned Parenthood in a bill that you're saying that we need to go ahead and pass so the American people can get the money that's needed to fight against this virus?
Right, and you're absolutely right. It pretty much goes to their motive. And to show that they don't care about you, you know, like Obamacare and everything. They don't care. They want everybody to have insurance. They don't care if you have good health. They just want to have insurance and tell you this is great. And they've been saying it and lying about it the whole time. It's about power and control. It's morally corrupt. It's an anti-God movement. It's an anti-right from wrong. And they want to do wrong because they don't even care if it's right or wrong. They just want power and control. And I can tell you, that would segue into why I wrote the books. You know, I was a cardiologist. I was a single parent. Once my last kid went to college and I came to Wilmington, I got more involved in political science. And I got very upset in 2009 when they were doing Obamacare. and I knew they would hurt this country. They would hurt the people of this country. I love this country. I'm a patriot. I am a doctor. I also like to see what's in the best interest of all Americans and all people, because, you know, when America thrives, we don't help the people in our country. Our advances help the people in the world. We're responsible for 70 to 80% of the medical and technological advances in the world. So when America does well and is healthy and strong, the world does better. And so that's an important thing from my perspective. So I wrote, at first I wrote a book, How to Vote to Save This Country, because I was scared that Obama would get reelected in 2012 and Obamacare would stay. And unfortunately we had Romney and a weak candidate and right. It didn't work. I also, right after that, wrote the book Obamacare, that not only talked about the problems with Obamacare, because it's easy to criticize, but I actually wrote the solutions on how to fix this country's healthcare. Because I'm going to just give you one example. If you were to say Trump, he did a great job with the economy. He did what was shown to be proven correct four times before. It happened with Harding in the 1920s. It happened with JFK in the 1960s. It happened with Reagan in the 80s. And it happened with George W. Bush in early 2000, where you decrease the taxes, give more money to the people, and the government revenue increases. Well, not only did he do that, he had enough intelligence to understand how to get people more jobs and how to negotiate more trade agreements that were favorable to this country. Now, when you do that, and understand that a free market system will make things better for more Americans and make our quality of life better, well, you have to do those same principles for healthcare. And so, you know, that's why I had solutions with Obamacare. And recently I just finished the book, Rules for Conservative Patriots, with basically our rules that we all need to do, learning how to think, learning how to learn, learning how to preach, learning our governance, learning why our country's great, learning civics, learning economy, how the economic principles and free market work, the differences of communism and fascism and socialism, and learning about how to take care of yourself, not just for yourself, for your family, but for your country and a good healthcare policy. So those are the things I wrote in this book. And I tied it all in, Brian, with a moral attitude about how this is a nation under God. And if we don't have a strong belief in God and that we are blessed because of God and this nation is blessed, and then tie it all together and understand the only way we'd be blessed is we continue a strong economy and continue a strong healthcare and continue a strong military, so that we are not just strong leaders in the world, but also strong moral leaders. And I think that's what God wants from us, and that's our purpose. And so that's why I got this last book out. It also talks about how the Republican platform should be and what a convention of states should have in terms of term limits and a balanced budget and things of that nature. So basically, in that book, all these books are going to be out on Amazon. The last book probably will come out, like I say, in about a month. But people can go to my website, Dr. Tony Magg, DrTonyMagg, and they can get the books from there. They can get the books directly from Amazon. And eventually the new book will also be in Barnes & Noble's and some other stores. But that's probably a couple of months away. So that's about it. That's about to tell you about the books. I hope that covers it. If you have any more questions, if not, I do want to thank you for allowing me to talk. I hope it's been educational for you guys.
So my only question that I have left, Doc, is are you gonna run for a political office?
No, I'm not. I'm happily married to a wonderful woman and I have a great life. Unfortunately, I'm poorer this last four weeks. But the idea, I wanted to be in a position. I actually applied. But everybody else in my family who's in North Carolina, my kids, my ex, they would say the worst things about me and keep me. So if the SBI, because when you get vetted, the SBI vets you, I don't know if that's true. I can't tell you. But I do know I was being vetted for a position. I did want to work for Trump. I do want to work and do service. But unfortunately, you have to know the right people and have the right connections to be given that chance, because I'm just a regular doctor. I did train at the Cleveland Clinic. I did do a lot of social media, radio. I've been on TV in the past. I've written 3 books, but that doesn't get you anywhere near Washington, D.C. That place is a cesspool. And unless you know the right people, you can't get in the door there. And if God leads me to something like that, I'll be happy to serve. But in terms of me running for an office, there's no way, because it's just too petty. It's too ugly a sport.
It's just crazy, because I've been, since I started this podcast, I've been asked that same thing. And that's basically the same thing that I've been telling people is, you know, it's just so much drama, and it's just so bad that it's something that I mean, I'm 28, Doc. So it's something that I would have to think about long and hard and, you know, pray about and ask the good Lord if that's something they want, you know, if that's something he wants. Cause unless I have a firm belief that that's what he wants, I feel like I'll just be fighting a battle for no reason. That's just how I feel.
Well, I mean, yeah, just never count anything out. Like I said, if something is called, something is called, and you may go down that road. So you just never know. And I know that I'm a problem solver. I think highly of what Trump's had to go through, because to me, it's very frustrating that he knows. They think he's stupid. Believe me, he knows a lot of stuff. He doesn't know healthcare, unfortunately. He's not getting good advice. But his ideas about how to handle us in the foreign matters and on economics and to strengthen our military, they were great. And also, he's been a great president morally. He understands the biblical nature of Jerusalem and Israel and the Jews. And he understands, you know, he's the most pro-life president we've ever had. He understands bringing back prayer and all the other things that will help us morally in this country. And so he does good jobs, even though he's a very imperfect man. We have an imperfect country, but we, despite that, we have the best country in the world in terms of our governance, in terms of what our founding fathers started. And it has been proven, not because it's an opinion, but if you look at all the factors and analytically scientific method, understand it, we are the best by every parameter. It only takes people spinning it to make it ugly. So that's the sad thing. And that's why I was a little sad today that Trump got a little duped by all the drama there in Washington, D.C. with this and started to call for people not to go out and everything. I think we should be, people should be going out, not as often, but they still should be supporting restaurants and businesses and just the people who are at intermediate risk and high risk should be staying home. And they're the ones who are in peril, not the other 5% of us. But he got duped into it, and he may have other reasons that I'm unaware of, but reality is what it is. But I wish you good luck. It sounds like you got a good head on your shoulders there. And we also, like I said, we appreciate what you've done for our service.
Yes, sir. And I appreciate you for a chance on me and coming on here. And I, if you don't mind, I know you're super busy, but when your book drops, I'd like to try to do another segment, maybe not a full one with you, but at least a small segment to promote your book.
Okay. I will drop you an email.
All right. And, yes, sir. This has been the Lock on Everything with your host, Brian Lockley.